Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. You're going to be very excited when you find out who's with us right now. Joan Pride is here. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And I know that you, all of you, get your hearts get all a-twitter when you think about Joan being back on the show. Right, Joan?
Gee, I don't want to give anybody a heart attack. Wow.
Welcome back, Joan. It's good to have
you here. Thank you, Jim. Glad to be back.
Isn't it interesting how the immigration bill has made the strange political bedfellows?
Oh, sure.
I mean, think about this, folks. We got Ted Kennedy and George Bush agreeing to work together on something.
That's right.
And, you know, pigs flew this week, Joan. Did you know that?
Oh, really? What happened?
Yeah, because I actually agreed with something that Ted Kennedy said.
Okay, now I need oxygen.
I know. I believe it. Well, I heard him say something that I understand people say a lot in Washington. It wasn't original to him. He was talking about the immigration bill.
Okay.
And he said, we don't need to let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
He said that? That's what you say all the time.
Well, I know.
You must be listening to your show.
I'm telling you. I think you're right. But there, you know, it's this immigration thing, Joan, is really kind of a hard thing for the average person to get their hands around. You know, I know the interesting thing is I know some conservatives who are immigration experts.
Yeah.
And they are conservative Republicans.
Right.
But they're immigration experts. They're not political experts.
Yeah.
They don't have a political, you know, they're more focused on how do we fix immigration than they are on how do I become, you know, how do I be more of a Republican conservative?
Yeah.
And they are in favor of this of the immigration bill.
Well, I don't see how you can ever get a perfect bill. This is sort of the grand compromise. Now, and then, you know, it was in trouble, and then it was kind of resurrected, and now it seems to be in trouble again.
Yeah. It's hard to see where, and it's one of those things that you almost don't want to plug into it until it looks like it's going to make it. You don't want to get invested in it because if it's not going to make it, but the thing that. That I think that most of the conservatives want. They want no talk of anything that might even smack in the least way of amnesty in anything that they agree to. All they want to start with is strictly border enforcement. They say let's stop the bleeding first, and then maybe we'll talk about this other stuff. Isn't that what they're saying?
I think you're right. Yeah.
And so, anyway, it's the only thing that bothers me about this bill, which and the reason I bring it up is because that's what's on the Congress's plate right now. I mean, that's what they're working on right now.
Oh yeah.
And the
front and center.
The only thing that concerns me about it, Joan, is the penalty, the enforcement of checking who your employees that you're hiring are, checking their backgrounds and everything. That regulation, that mandate, and the enforcement of it, and the potential penalties that small business owners could suffer, even if they didn't intentionally do anything wrong, if they just accidentally maybe didn't do quite as good a job as they should have and they made a mistake. There's some pretty onerous stuff in there for small business owners, and that's one of the things I'm concerned about.
Well, you know that there's been a development in that area as well.
There is
an amendment that was proposed by the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee that would change that. I don't think it's been added to the bill yet, but they're really pushing it. It would change it actually dramatically, because instead of requiring employers to verify the IDs of all their workers, it would only require verification if there was reason to believe there was a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Now, that would be great for employers if that change were made. However, given that this is all part of this grand, intricate compromise, if that piece were changed, that might cause support to weaken among you know, the diehard conservatives. So that's going to be a very tricky thing to try to fix.
Well, the reason why they need to fix that, Joan, is in the spirit of a lot of other things that have been going on over the last several years with regard to regulators. For example, there was a time when OSHA was only interested in catching people doing things wrong so they could fine them and make their life miserable.
Right.
And the EPA and the Labor Department, people like that. But in the last 10 years or so, those organizations, as you and I have reported, have been more part of the solution. They've been coming in, and if they find somebody doing something wrong or doing something they weren't supposed to be doing, they would actually say, you know, let me help you fix this.
Yeah.
Obviously, you didn't do this intentionally. Let me help you fix this. And they've even told people, if you think you have a problem, contact us. We're not looking to hang you. We just want to get you into compliance.
Right.
So there's all that precedent, Joan, for the immigration bill having the same kind of spirit.
Exactly.
So I hope they get that worked out. But you know, if it doesn't get done this summer, Joan, it's probably not going to happen until after the next election.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was a window for them to get this done, and boy, they're so close, but it could still unravel. And maybe, who knows, maybe it has to die a couple more times this year before it gets done this year. I don't know.
Let me throw another little thing that I'm a little bit concerned about might happen. As you know, the check card bill, the alleged, the incorrectly named, I don't know the best way to say it, the incorrectly named Employee Free Choice Act. There's nothing free choice about this act.
Right.
That one that gives it's a stop to the unions by the Democrats. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. That didn't pass this last week. And what worries me is that the Democrats might try to stick that into an amendment, into something like this that George Bush desperately wants.
Now, is this something that may happen, or are you just being paranoid?
I'm being paranoid.
Okay, just check.
But you know, Joan, sometimes when you're paranoid, there's a reason, because they actually may be out to get you. So that's
okay.
That's something to think about. No, but seriously, I know that those kind, you and I both know those kinds of things happen.
Sure.
And so
all the time.
Some variation of this thing could get stuck into that. And see, George Bush would never sign a bill like that. Of course, it didn't get closer. They weren't able to get it through the Senate. So it's not going to become law. It's dead on arrival.
Right.
Unless they stick it into something, and George Bush wants it so badly that he signs it.
That's right.
I'm a little concerned about that. Joan, quick break. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about water. Do you have enough water? Some of you have too much water. Right after these messages, 20 after. Stay with us.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel. I see it burning bright. It don't matter
where. A little bit of Steely Dan for you there. Welcome back. It's 23. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find our show. Lots of different ways. The live show, the replay, the individual archives, thousands of those. And as you know, all of our stuff is MP3 now. And all of our media is MP3 and all the archives and everything, and you can podcast everything. Not only can you stream it on MP3 and just listen to it, you can actually take fair use possession of our archives and use them to your advantage. Burn them onto a CD, put them in your car, take them with you. Many of you have been asking me for this for years, and so now we have it, and I hope you take advantage of that. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week on Sunday by email. Get you ready for the week ahead, and of course, every weekday, and we also have thousands of articles there on that website. And of course, we have our knowledge base, AskJim.biz, the world's only knowledge base for small business. And it's where you can go and ask questions about your small business, about opportunities and challenges that you may have, and we're going to give you some answers. And so I hope you'll check that out. No barrier to any of our websites, folks. If you can get there, we'll let you in. Joan Pryde is our guest. We're talking about current events, especially the ones that Kiplinger has to say about in their weekly letter, the Kiplinger letter. Joan, the cover story this week is water.
It sure is. And we have a really cool map, I think.
It's an outstanding map.
Yeah.
I've never seen a map like this before.
Yeah.
It shows, tell us what it shows, Joan.
Well, I wish your readers,
Joan, they can because everyone listening is a subscriber. You know they wouldn't have listened to you
point.
All these years without subscribing.
Well, it shows the intensity of drought in the United States. And there's actually large swaths of the United States where drought is not that bad. And what's interesting to me is if you go to the middle of the country, most of it is okay, which surprises mm-hmm. me. And where drought is bad is in the southwest, which you can kind of expect, but also in always thought of the southeast as more of a kind of a hot, humid, swampy kind of place.
Well, typically because the Gulf air, the Gulf moisture just gets sucked right up into that part of the world.
Right.
And typically, whereas in the Pacific or the Southwest, you're coming in off of the Mexican desert there. But no, you're exactly right. It is pretty abnormal for the southeast to have.
And you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, almost 4 or 5 states in the southeast where drought is either severe or extreme.
It's pretty significant. Of course, out in California, they got big problems. They got fires and everything. But then look in Texas, Joan.
Texas is cool. Texas is fine.
They're flooding, Joan.
Well, they're flooding, yeah. But
no,
I mean, in terms of drought.
No, they don't have a drought. They got the opposite.
Yeah.
And of course, Joplin, Missouri, the other day was 6 feet underwater. I mean,
right.
We could have a
flooding monitor, and I guess it would be the opposite of what this shows. It's
I was going to say
thing.
You guys missed an opportunity here with your graphic. You could have put a flood graphic in the middle there, but it's just bizarre. I mean, Mother Nature's having her way with us, isn't she?
Boy, no question about that.
But overall, Joan, you guys are talking about. I think your point here about water supply is not necessarily regional, because obviously we know that these what we're looking at here in terms of the drought, those aren't going to be that way forever.
Right.
But they're going to, in 6 months it'll be different. But overall, Joan, where do we stand with water?
Well, we're saying that, even though many states aren't in drought conditions, that we have to get used to less water because there are going to be droughts all over the place, and we're going to have to cope with the fact that we're just not going to have the same amount of water going forward that we've had in the past, which is kind of scary.
We got a lot of water in the United States.
We do?
We're so blessed with water.
So you're saying that what we're saying is too inflammatory?
No, I'm saying that we got to rethink how we supply water and how we move water around. And
okay, yeah.
I mean, think about it. I mean, we got magnificent rivers.
And lakes.
Yeah. And of course, water's not that, not that easily portable, not that easy to move around. But I mean, nobody's going to die of thirst in America. We got lots of water, but we do have issues where we're overbuilding in areas where there's not a lot of water, like in the Southwest.
Right.
I mean, if you go to Palm Springs area, all down through there, heading over towards Arizona. I mean, they're just building and building and building. I mean, eventually, Joan, between Phoenix and L.A., it'll be one big shopping zone. I'm serious. In 20 years, you'll have a shopping center, some kind of a strip mall or something. It'll be commercial from Phoenix to L.A. I mean,
that's incredible.
Just,
I can't even imagine that.
They're building and building and building, but yet they don't have much water down out there.
Yeah.
It's a desert. So,
that's the problem.
That's an issue. But Joan, what I don't understand is if we've got all this global warming, doesn't that mean the solar caps are melting? Isn't that what the environmentalists are telling us? And if that's the case, shouldn't we be having more water?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's part of it in certain areas.
But I think
global warming is also making things too hot and raising the temperature and creating problems.
When the temperature rises, Joan, that creates convection, which creates rain.
Oh, now you're way beyond me.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out. Trouble sorting all this out, ladies and gentlemen. 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Every day
business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame. Business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. Before after, thanks very much for hanging around with us today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, one of the things that we're talking about water, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things that I mentioned a minute ago about how we're going to have to be better about using water. You got, I mean, that's what you guys point out in the letter this week.
Yes.
You talk. Conserving water and catching water. I mean, we see water running off of our roofs and hitting the ground out there, and we just think, whoa, well, that's kind of nice. It's raining, but you know, maybe we should be doing something about that. Maybe,
yeah.
And I think you guys point out that there may be some business opportunity in some of this.
Well, that's true, which is kind of interesting, and this is sort of the way that Kiplinger looks at these things, and I guess we're saying that businesses could add roofs to catch rainwater, or get rid of fountains, replace thirsty, less demanding plants. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do.
Well, and the other thing is you know, one day I think we're going to wind up maybe two water supplies. One is, you know, potable water, and one is water that's going to be used for other things.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
You know, we don't have to. Why should we water our lawns with drinking
water? With potable water,
With drinking water. I mean, you know, that's kind of a waste of energy. And
I have a pet peeve. Maybe you can tell me why this.
Whoa, wait a minute. Alert the media, ladies and gentlemen. Joan Pride has a pet peeve. I've never known you to have a pet peeve before, Joan.
When I walk down the street in the morning in downtown D.C., and I'm sure this happens in urban areas all over the country, you see the folks outside, the building manager standing outside. They've got a hose. They're hosing. They're using gallons and gallons of water to hose down the sidewalk rather than sweeping it. Why do they do that? And why are they allowed to do that?
I don't know why you. And John, I'm sure you walk up and read them the riot act.
Well, I was thinking I should take their hoses away from them. Don't you think?
Can I watch?
Isn't that a complete waste of water?
It is a complete waste of water, and it's probably the reason the Southeast and the West are in a drought right now.
I'll bet it is that one. But really, I think, and I can't understand why they would do that unless they're just too, you know, lazy to sweep.
Well,
sweeping takes more effort.
It does, but, you know, sweeping doesn't get all the things off that needs to be gotten off, maybe. So, I'm sorry, Joan. Like, it's a rude world, isn't it?
It is. It really bothers me.
Well, if you decide to you know, go off on somebody, please let me know. I'd like to come and watch that little Okay, let's talk, Joan, about the. By the way, let's move over before we leave water and talk about the some other business opportunities. You say that there may be some recycling opportunities for people and people who build water tanks and dig reservoirs and things like that. There may be some opportunity for those businesses. Maybe some niche opportunities.
That's right, and also that we talk about firms earning rebates. They get involved in these redistribution systems, which could be, at least in this area, could be pretty lucrative.
One of the things, Joan, before water that I think is interesting is that the futurists that I've been talking to over the last several years, way back in the 90s, were predicting water wars.
Yes.
If you remember Kiplinger, I remember a few years ago, Joan, you and I covered the water wars that were going on, and I think probably still are going on.
At least
I think there may be still one going on, but there's at least some tension between, let's say, Virginia and Maryland.
Oh, they for a long time, yeah.
Florida and Georgia.
Right.
Georgia and Alabama has a water war going on.
We have the beautiful Chesapeake Bay in my area, and Virginia and Maryland fight over that continually.
Yeah. And, I mean, you've got some states wanting to run a pipeline across their state. State where there's another state has a big river going running
right
through it, and they want to go siphon off some of that water, and the people in those in the state who owns the river don't want them to do it.
They're saying NIMBY.
That's exactly right. And so these are all very interesting things, but Joan, I do believe that that over the next, I think you guys are very, very wise and prescient to point this out, that over the next several years, 10, 20 years, there's going to be a significant increase in commercial opportunities associated with water. Think about this. 20 years ago, if you went to the grocery store to buy water, you could go get a gallon of water, but it was distilled water.
Yes.
You didn't go to get drinking water at the store.
Right.
Now there's as much drinking water as there is Coca-Colas or Pepsi's or
whatever. And just as expensive.
Whatever. So that's just an example, though. My point is that's an example of how the commercial opportunities of water. Who would have thunk it? 22. We're going to be right back with our good I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, with the Kiplinger Editors, and I encourage you to check out their website, ladies and gentlemen, kiplinger.com. It's a great website. It's a place where you can go and find a lot of information. And the public side of their site has no barrier to entry. You can check it out and use it to your advantage.
That's right.
Lots of good stuff there. There is a subscription side. There's a little bit extra information that comes if you're a subscriber, but you also get publications with that, don't you, Joan?
Oh, no.
Like the one we're working off of every week, the Kiplinger Letter, the flagship that's almost 84 years old. And that's the weekly publication. And, of course, they got the three biweeklies.
Right.
The California Letter, the Tax Letter, Joan's favorite, and then the Agriculture Letter, which is some of my favorite people in the world, our farmers.
Right.
And then those four publications that are the kind of the letters, and then we've got the
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So check that out, folks. Joan, what's that phone number?
Oh, right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-1155.
And the reason you want that number, folks, is that's how you can subscribe if you don't want to do it online. But wherever you go, be sure to ask them for the 30-day free trial. Joan, mortgage rates are going up, aren't they?
I'm afraid so.
And that's not good for home building, is it? Or housing?
Well, I mean, we've already been having problems in the housing market, not everywhere, but in a lot of places, many places in the country. And now this is not going to help. We're saying that right now, 30-year fixed rate is about 6.7%, but that's up from 6.1% a month ago.
But Joan, you know, the thing is if you overlay that really relatively small increase. It's not really a big increase.
Right.
If you overlay that on some news I heard this week that home builders were averaging, and I don't know where these were. I don't know if this place in Peoria or not, but in some places, home builders had increased the rebates and the discounts that they were giving, the value added kind of things that they were giving for selling. They increased that from like $20,000 to over $40,000.
Really? Wow.
So the bad news is interest rates are going up. The good news is you ought to be able to cut a good deal.
Yeah.
Especially on new houses that are being sold by home builders. I mean, Joan, there really are times in the marketplace, different times when it's better to buy an existing house. That, you know, the value is more in the existing house. When there's more value to be had with a new home that a builder owns.
That's right.
And this is one of those times that I think that it's you're better off with finding a builder that's holding a house. He needs to turn it. She needs to turn it. And you know, don't make them an offer unless you don't make them a ridiculous offer unless you're willing to sign on the line. Because they just might snap you up there.
Now they have inventory that they're trying to get rid of. That's true.
Yeah, a lot of it. Joan, I thought it was interesting the way you guys blended immigration into this home building issue.
Yeah, how did we manage to do that?
Well, and when you talk about the new arrivals are going to housing, new demand for houses over the long term. You guys are out there all by yourself on this one.
Well, they're a great pool of first.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and not only, you know, here's what the other thing we've got to remember, Joan. rental properties put pressure, upward pressure on home buying. Because, you know, the more renters you have, the higher rents go.
Right.
And the higher rents go, the more homes become, you know, closer to being affordable.
Exactly.
If you see what I mean. In other words, right. if a rents are going up, you know, well, hey, at some point in time, some people are saying, you know what, I could own a house for this.
Right. And the first-time home buyer, their barrier to ownership is the down payment. But enough federal programs that, you know, it's likely that you could qualify.
Exactly. Joan, let's move over and talk about a little bit about politics. And Fred Thompson is in the spotlight this week.
Yeah, I heard a new term. I read a new term in the paper the other day, Fredheads.
I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, there's Fredheads out there.
Fredheads.
Yes.
What is it that people like about...
I've heard of deadheads and parrotheads, but not Fredheads.
What is it that people like about Fred Thompson?
Well, I guess conservatives
like... Am I asking the wrong guy?
Pardon me?
Am I asking the wrong person? Because you're not a Fredhead.
No, not a Fredhead. I mean, I don't dislike the man.
You're not a Hillary head either.
No, I'm a nobody head, I guess.
Or an Obama head. You're not even an Obama head, are you?
But, I know Fred Thompson is said to have the conservative credentials that many conservatives are kind of longing for. So maybe that's what makes him so attractive. I don't know.
The only thing that concerns me about him, I don't know much about him. I think I like his philosophy of the government, of how the government should be. I think, but you know what? He's, to my knowledge, he's never really run an organization. I mean,
he's a prosecutor. He only plays one on TV. Sorry.
No, he actually, he has a law degree. He actually was part of the Watergate apparatus back in the 70s, and
he was a senator for what, one term?
One term,
or
something
less.
Like that. And senators don't manage anything.
No.
So that's one thing that concerns me a little bit.
But doesn't it worry you that people might vote for him because of his image as a prosecutor on TV?
Joan, tell me how long it's been since it was the presidential process was anything but a beauty contest.
But a beauty contest, yeah.
You know, think about it.
Yeah, but this takes it to an extreme, I think.
Well, a lot of people said that about Ronald Reagan. Of course, he had been a governor.
Yeah, he had been a governor.
He'd earned his bones in the conservative side for a long time. No question about that. Well, one of my political experts says it's a whole lot different in being an unannounced candidate and being a candidate. He said that's when he announces, he said that's when everything, becomes fair game.
And we'll
see how he's able to bear up under that. 10 till, right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. It's 7 till. There's the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, knocking it out for us. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. Joan's with the Kiplinger Editor. She's senior editor there. Joan, on the bottom of page 3, you guys have got a great piece here on wellness and how some governments are actually ponying up, stepping up to the table to encourage with tax incentives companies to get their employees to live a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah, I think this is a great idea. They're offering tax incentives to employers that help workers quit smoking, lose weight, manage, I guess, diabetes or other chronic diseases, things like that. And we're also saying that several states are considering wellness tax credits. Which I think is very interesting.
I think that's
real innovation.
The only thing that bugs me a little bit about wellness is sometimes and I know this is kind of this is like your water on the hosing off the sidewalk, Joan. if I've lived my life without overindulging with alcohol and I don't smoke and things like that, no drugs, that sort of thing, and then the company comes in, the state comes in, and they give money to people who've been doing that to get them to stop. Well, you know, what about me? What am I, chopped liver?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And so I think it ought to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, they ought to be. What I think they ought to do is encourage people who are doing the right thing, and let the other people follow. But I will tell you this, Joan, I've done a number of interviews over the years with companies that have, where we've demonstrated how they've been able to hold down their health care costs to maybe 3 or 4%
right.
in the face of double-digit increases by everybody else. And one of the ways they did that was by encouraging wellness. One company I remember, Joan, you know, they used to have a smoking room. When smoking areas started being defined in areas, they turned the smoking room into an exercise room.
Oh, wow. That's
they eliminated
a great idea.
The smoking room and made it into an exercise room. And so over the last 20 years or so, they have been able to completely hold down their health care cost increases.
That's a terrific idea.
Yeah, and their employees live longer, they last longer, they show up for work more often.
More productive.
Exactly. No question about it. So these are all good things. So folks, look for this in your state. The states are getting involved in this, and encourage your state policymakers to keep working on this and help them, support them when they do. Joan, let's move over and talk about taxes. This is an area that you've focused on a lot. And tell us what the tax gap is.
Well, the tax gap is basically the difference between what the IRS should be collecting, you know, what people owe, and what it actually takes in. And a lot of what the gap involves is what you and I would know as the underground economy.
Mm-hmm. Which is?
Better. Well, people that aren't reporting in income, but a lot of it is people paying in cash, or, as you say, barter, but ways of getting around the system so that you don't have to report income.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, when the IRS... When you're issuing a W-2, the IRS can track that. Mm-hmm. But when you're just, say, paying a handyman or someone like that, and that's done in cash or even by check, the IRS has no way to know that that transaction occurred.
Anything over $600 a year. Now, that number may be off now, but the last memory I had was anything over $600 a year, meaning your babysitter you probably were all right with, but your housekeeper probably not. Or the, you know, anything over $600 a year had to be reported on a 1099.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're an individual. Now, Joan, one of the CPAs in our brain trust, Doug Stives, recently attended a tax gap conference, and he reported to us last time he was on, I think a few days ago when he was on the show, that basically the IRS thinks that most of the tax gap it can be solved by putting more pressure on small business.
Oh,
I think most
definitely.
Of the problem,
That's
most
definitely
of the problem
what IRS
the tax
thinks.
Gap
yep.
is small business. So,
yep.
So small business owners, gird your loins. They may be coming after you.
Oh, yeah.
And Joan, one person, I thought you'd find this interesting, one person offered as a suggestion how to fix the tax gap. He said, why don't you create a lottery so that everybody who was willing to file their return and make it subject to audit was put into a lottery, and the winner would get like $100 million. But Joan, here's the thing. They think there may be $500 billion in lost income.
Yes, that's right.
It's huge.
I know.
So $100 million would be a good investment.
Oh, sure.
So I thought you'd find that kind of funny. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim. See you next week.
Okay. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.